Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. I am Mike Lewis. Joining me is Dre's. The text line is 98973. Feel free to weigh in on whether or not... Actually, feel free to weigh in on the question I am going to ask Dre's right now. Is it possible to use any Native American name or icon as a team name and have it be acceptable, in your opinion?
Yes, okay. I do.
So in what instances would you say?
When I say possible, I mean in the instances where it is completely working with the Native American community and they are validating or signing off on it, right? So by and large, I think there has to be a consistent effort of you working with them. It's a sensitive way that you're going to have move, right?
So we're talking about the really dynamite story. I'd suggest you check out the New York Times on this. The story is headlined, Why One Team Named the Indians Won't Be Changing Its Name. And it turns out it's the Spokane, Washington minor league baseball team. It is actually a part of the Cleveland Indians organization. But listen to this. The minor league team in Washington State has been collaborating with the Spokane Tribe of Indians in what it hopes has been a respectful manner honoring the local indigenous population. And in fact, the Spokane Tribe of Indians has endorsed the way the team's effort. In fact, it said, this is from the tribal council, they came and listened to the elders, and that's what really developed the relationship over time, said Carol Evans, chairwoman of the Spokane Tribal Council. It's grown like a family partnership unit where there's a lot of respect for one another. Now, that is not a universally held opinion, certainly not in the Native American community. Let me read you another quote. There is no such thing as a respectable treatment of any mascot or team name that has a Native theme in sports. This is from Sean Harjo. She's an advocate for Native American rights. Quote, there is just no such thing, no matter how you package it. The Cleveland Indians, who were contacted in this story, said that they were having discussions on the best, quote, the best path forward. And the Spokane Indians, who actually have used the Spokane written in Salish on their jerseys as an effort to sort of be to incorporate, have said that they would be willing to abandon the name, but so far the local tribe seems pretty on board with the way the tribe is reaching out and incorporating a lot of the tribe imagery and history in their day-to-day operation, in the team's day-to-day operation.
Yeah, this is really, really, it's interesting because there's almost no way for anything in this country to get 100% yes on, right?
It's bingo,
exactly. just a fact. We go in too many different directions, but they talked about abandoning the name 14 years ago, right?
Which would put them very early in the process of these sort of things.
They are not being moved by what's happening around us, but to have worked with the community and hear what the community has to say, I came into this going, no. Absolutely not, right? And reading the article made me say, you know what? It could be possible, right? I will say I'm not the authority because I'm not from the community, right? So you would have to talk to someone from their community to really say, does this work? I also see that their mascot used to have a Native figure and they changed it to a trout, right? In their process of working together with the chiefs within this tribe. Also, they added a traditional food on there. So they have the trout, and then they added a feather, that is inspired by the art of a member of the Spokane community. So taking the thought and the care that's gone into changing the mascot, right? We're going to have it be a trout. We're going to have a feather that's drawn by someone from the community, making sure you're paying for the work to get done. All of these things, I think, just go into the intentionality and the openness to still change it, right?
So what are your thoughts on the Florida State University Seminoles?
You know what? I don't know enough about it. I've heard some stuff in the past. I just happen to be my other football team is the Washington football team.
Oh,
right.
Interesting.
So the Seahawks are my first team, but as a kid, I fell in love with John Riggins and Joe Theismann and all those guys and the Washington football team, right?
Right.
But at some point in my journey, I realized, wait a minute. Hold on. No one told me this name is bad, right? And so I'm like, you know, I still love the team, but the name and the owner, I won't get into him. But what about you about the Seminoles, as you were saying?
So I kind of – it's one of those things where you kind of wait for the – primarily, you can sort of make this larger point that any level if this is interpreted as racist, that it affects all of us, not just the targeted group. Like it makes society less than. However, I usually look to guidance from the affected group. That's where I first go to find out how should I react to this. I think so far the Seminole Nation has been relatively on board, at least the people at the upper end. Now I don't know why that is, and I'm sure that within the nation they are not. It is not universally held, right? We all know that there is not. You can't say this is a Native American opinion any more than you can say this is an American opinion or a Chinese opinion. Yeah. I mean, there is a variety of opinions about these things.
This is why I always say I'd never have bought into the philosophy that if someone is offended, then you get rid of everything. No, there has to be
credibility.
Has to be credibility to it, and it has to be a certain number. And I'm not here to tell you what the number is. But at the end of the day, if the mass of the community is saying, hey, I have seen articles where down in the Florida area, you have people saying, hey, this is cool. We love the Seminoles. We get behind this team. So I'm with you. The other thing I want to say is it's okay to say I don't know. People actually get angry at you where it's like, you should be educated. You should know everything. Right. No, I shouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and even if people who you agree with on 9 points out of 10 have a 10th point that you're sort of unsure about, you know, embrace the fact that you're unsure and learn something about it. That's what I do. I mean, I was apologizing to, I don't know who, if it was Aaron Mason or someone else I was working with on one of the shows saying, you know I say I don't know a lot. It's only because I don't know a lot. You know, there really are things that I haven't yet gotten to a point of information where I can make that sort of hot take. Yeah. You know, it's easy if you're talking about, you know, whether or not the Mariners have won a World Series.
Right.
Pretty easy opinion for us to make. But it gets difficult when you get into more nuanced issues. I mean, the Spokane Indians, for example, they've even named used the Salish language on their bathroom signs. I mean, they've gone through. They feel like, and so I would say that if this level of effort, and let me also separate one thing out.
Go ahead. Me say this: the level of effort has to be. It has to be the terms of it or the level has to be set by the tribe.
Totally.
Not by the team.
Completely.
Right.
It can't be like the team's made incredible efforts of its own design.
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't matter. I completely agree with you. But I would also say like there seems to be this separation in calling a team if you look at sort of the level of the number of stories that have been written nationally, calling a team something broad like the Indians. Or let's just say the Washington team, former name, the Redskins.
Right.
Those tend to get real flashpoints. The specific tribal name mascots seem to get less.
Yeah.
And I've actually literally done web searches on this to find out, well, why is that?
What's the difference?
What's the difference?
Okay.
Because I genuinely don't know. And I'm willing to take someone else's lead on it to see what tell me what at least give me some information so I can arrive at original
Mike,
thought.
You're offensive and you're...
Yeah.
I know, that's what comes next. Listen, all I say to people is there are 30 things I could throw at you right now you would not have an answer for. When I say I don't know, what I really mean is I don't know and I'm going to do my best to go get educated so that I can come back and have a better opinion. And that education for me starts with the person who's being impacted.
That's an absolutely appropriate way to look at it. So while you don't know and I don't know, let's talk about a guy who does know.
Yes.
Or claims he does know.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, he knows.
This would be Alan Lichtman. He may pronounce it Lichtman. Do you know, Jacob, how he pronounces it?
I definitely heard the C sound, the Lichtman.
Lichtman, okay. Alan Lichtman, who is a history professor, has apparently correctly picked the winner of every presidential election since Ronald Reagan won in 1984, using his, and I'm quoting him now, his 13 keys system. It's worth mentioning in 2000, however, he predicted that Al Gore would win the election, and Gore did win the popular vote. He lost based on the Electoral College. So I don't know. So I've got problems with this story. I'm not even going to go farther into talking about him and his predictions.
He's impressive.
Call me unimpressed.
He's impressively unimpressive.
Yeah, he's really unimpressive.
He's done a really good job, but I want to talk about his 13 keys, like economy, incumbency, social unrest going on, scandals. Like, thank you. I did not need you to come up with these 13 points. At the end of the day, I have the exact
same. You kind of knew.
Yeah, I got the same 13 points.
Let's listen for just a sec for, do we have time? Yeah, we do. Yeah, let's listen for a sec for, this is him explaining, correct? These 13 magic keys.
Remember, an answer of true always favors the re-election of the White House party. If six or more of the keys are false, you get a political earthquake.
Okay, number one. The White House party gained House seats between midterm elections.
Republicans lost the U.S. House midterms in 2018, so false.
Number two. There is no primary contest for the White House party.
True.
Number three, the incumbency key. The sitting president is running for re-election.
True.
Four, there's no third-party challenger.
Despite claims by Kanye West to be running, this is a two-party race.
Number five, the short-term economy is strong.
False.
Can I stop for just a minute?
This is awesome. This is awesome. This is awesome. This guy is educating us about nothing. Absolutely nothing. I want to do something, though. Let's have some fun with him.
All right.
One moment. I'm going to shoot a few things at you. You tell me.
True or false?
Impressive. Impressive or unimpressive. So this is what he has predicted since Ronald Reagan. He's gotten them all right. He predicted that George Bush from 89 to 93 would be the president. Were you impressed?
No.
Okay. We move on. We are moving to one Bill Clinton, right? I did not have relations with that woman. Okay, so Bill Clinton from 93 to 01. Is that an impressive one?
No.
Not at all?
Not at all.
Okay. Let's move on. Come on. I'm cutting in some slack.
All right.
Are you impressed with the son of George Bush? Like, oh my gosh, this one, he really reached here, right? Didn't he?
I would say, well, so I'm going to cut him a little bit of slack on the first one, the Al Gore one, because Al Gore actually won the popular election. This is also what happened with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Lost by 2 electoral votes. That one, you know, and a Supreme Court decision in Florida, that was one he was actually right on the popular vote, but wrong about the election.
Okay, so now we're getting into the good stuff here, right? We're into the future here. Barack Hussein Obama, are you cutting him some slack for predicting the first black president of the United States of America, yes or no? Impressive or not impressive?
So when did he predict it is the big question.
You're talking.
Right, exactly. So if he predicted this in October, no. If he predicted this in January, I would have been pretty impressed with that. Yeah. I would be actually extremely impressed with that. But he didn't. He predicted it later in the year the way he's doing now with Donald Trump. I mean, if you look back at all of the elections since Reagan, we haven't had blowouts, but we've had ones that tracked along the lines of all the major polls. I kind of feel like, and then the one that he didn't get right, technically, because it was Electoral College win, was the Al Gore George Bush race. He apparently got the Donald Trump. He literally, on the two closest ones, by far closest ones, he's one of two. Now, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good percentage it is in basketball. I would say but it's not so great in predicting elections. I mean, he predicted he had a whole bunch of gimmies, and then he had two tough ones, and he only got one of those right.
Especially, I'm all the more unimpressed considering where we are right now. Right, if he was picking these, as you said earlier, yes, maybe I'm even impressed with one or two. But he's literally picking them. I mean, this is coming out in August, like. Oh, my God, he picked Joe Biden to beat Donald Trump.
All right,
really?
So we both grew up playing pickup basketball. If somebody is hitting 50% on their layups, you know, if they're hitting 50% on the three-point, if they're back there a ways, fair enough. I'm super impressed. But on the layups, I didn't have one basketball coach who would have been thrilled with me missing every other one.
Okay, so give me this one. Is he impressive for the Donald Trump pick?
I would say that he is actually kind of impressive for the Donald Trump pick. Because I would say but there's about 6 or 7 professors out there who also lay claim to this. Not everyone lays claim all the way back to Reagan. But he wasn't the only person out there predicting it, but he was one of the few. Also, I will give him credit, but I'm not going to allow him to build a career on it.
You just crumbled his claim to fame.
Yes, I'm trying to.
Literally crumbled it
but
up.
But obviously, he's more famous than I am. So I don't know if me shouting at this guy is really going to matter.
I'll say the Barack Obama and the Donald Trump are impressive. I mean, there is something to be said about the first black man. It's something that, whether we like it or not, prior to many all the way up to the moment just would not have believed it to truly be possible. And then Donald Trump.
I completely agree with you on that point.
And then Donald Trump, I believe on election night, he couldn't believe it. The photos of him sitting there, he looked like, oh, no, what did I get myself into?
Well,
you mean I actually have to be president now? Like, he didn't believe it.
He had already had apparently a television deal cut. He was ready to go into the next thing and not be president. And the other, at least according to Bob Woodward's book, I think it was Bob Woodward's book, I read a couple of them about the election night, that Melania burst into tears when he was declared the winner. And it wasn't tears of joy. She's like, oh, my life is getting ruined. And I don't imagine that she is happier being first lady than she would have been just, you know, continuing on in New York and doing what she really loved doing.
He was he's been more hated than he ever has. And whether you like it or not, she does. I don't believe she likes that. She doesn't.
No, I don't think she likes that.
Like that, not only for him or for herself, right?
Or for the kids.
Yeah, for the kids. Anything. It's just kind of like, this is not what I signed up for. You did when you married an egomaniac. And so this guy has found some way to parlay his way into the White House. And
well, you know, but thank God we have people like Alan Lichtman letting us know what's going to happen. Sun's going to rise. Rain's going to fall.
Real quick, is Alan Lichtman more or less impressive than Paul the Octopus, who in 2010 correctly predicted all of the World Cup matches?
I think on land, more impressive. In the water, less so.
I love it.
How's that?
We are back. It's the Tom and Curly Show, and we're not Tom, Curly, or Jerry. It's Dre's. I'm with my guy, Mike Lewis. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. And just for you folks who are Tom and Curly addicts, John will be back next week, and Tom will be back the week after.
So there's this fascinating article that we were just reading through and talking about.
Speaking of addicts.
Speaking of addicts, right? So the idea here is that success addicts, the thought process being that there is a such thing as a success addict, the same way that some people get a dopamine hit, if you will, from an alcohol or from likes on Facebook,
right.
Unfortunately. Or TikTok, whatever that is, right? There are other people who get that kind of a hit, right? Just from something like success. And it ends up turning things on their head and disrupting their life the exact same way that an addiction to alcohol is, would, or something like that, right? Have you ever seen anything like this, heard of it, and what do you think about it?
You know, yeah, I mean, so I went back and forth on this. And weirdly enough, these stories that I think one thing and then think another, then think another, then think another, I kind of like those. I like the ones that sort of force me back and forth, and I can't decide where I'm at on this. It seemed to me like what the story really might be saying. So these people will do anything to achieve success. They'll miss their kids' Little League game, whatever, because they've got business appointments to make. They need to be hard charging in that regard. But what they don't really say in this, like, so let me just ask you. As you've had more success in the music industry, are you less happy?
Less happy?
Yeah.
No.
All right. So maybe what they're saying.
No.
So maybe what they're saying is the people who are striving for success yet remain unsuccessful are the people who really have the problem, and the people who get. I mean, because there is. They're sort of creating, I don't know, a false dichotomy, right? Like that.
Okay.
You can achieve success. Or you can achieve happiness.
Okay.
And sometimes you can achieve both. I mean, sometimes your success can make you happy. I think what they're saying is the people who are success obsessive are the ones who will carve away at their other happiness. But if they're success obsessives, and maybe that's something that they need to sort of get treatment for, maybe then they would not be happy if they just turned down the rheostat and hung out with their family.
See, I got something completely different from this article.
Okay.
So I'm looking at kind of the, as you say, success obsessives. I look from it and I go, in order to be truly great at anything, you have to be a success obsessive. That's a part of it. Michael Jordan, totally. You keep going down the line. Prince, I wasn't around him. Michael Jackson, whatever it is.
Right.
The people in our society who we go, oh my God, that guy is a genius at whatever he does. He's a success obsessive, and his family or her family, someone is paying the price,
yeah.
by and large,
no doubt.
Because he is addicted. He gets that hit. There's nothing like Prince writing a new song and going, ah, 3 a.m, he's getting up out of the bed. Apollonia's laying there.
Right.
He jumps out. He's got to go play the guitar and get it going.
Yeah, all right. So I'll give you that. But for every Michael Jordan who is successful, who we know about,
yep.
because he was successful, there are the other people who, what I'm saying, like, who maybe are just as obsessive and maybe just as much are carving other things out of their life who we don't know about. And why? Because they weren't actually good at whatever they were doing, or potentially not as good at whatever they were doing. And so are those the ones who need to have an off switch to maybe go towards something? I mean, if you're successful and you have tremendous regrets, and I imagine every successful person does, you have tremendous regrets about the things you haven't done, the relationships that you've let, that you've walked away from or just let dissolve, then I suppose that the success comes with a cost. The anecdote in this one, the kind of interesting one, and it is mythology, but nonetheless, they talk about Achilles and how Achilles, just before the big battle at Troy, Achilles is greeted or gets some sort of vision of he could right now go home and live out his life to an old age with his wife and his kids.
Chance.
Or he knows he's going to die.
Yes.
But he could have eternal glory.
Go, Achilles!
And I got to say, if I'm Achilles, obviously no mythology is written about me because I just go home.
Go to Achilles. Go charge ahead.
Right.
I mean,
would you go home or would you?
No chance, man. Go to the battle. This is it. It's Waterloo. Let's go.
I would text ahead. I forgot about an appointment.
Do you remember in Forrest Gump, Lieutenant Dan?
Yes.
How mad he was at Forrest Gump for not allowing him to die on the field.
Right.
I'm Lieutenant Dan. I have to die on the field. I have a place I have to be. But I want to take a step back because you talked about two different types of people. There's this genius who's amazing. Then there's the other guy who's not necessarily so
much. But just
as
obsessive.
Yes. Both of them, I think, I want to be clear, both of them need to learn work-life balance. My philosophy is not that the genius is right. Right? Like Steve Jobs.
But sometimes we do that in reverse engineering. Sometimes we assume that it's okay because, well, look what he did.
The money is the problem.
Like, right.
When we start, our false definition of success is, did you financially make it?
Right.
But I was like Steve Jobs reading the letter that he pins before he passes away. This is a man who's tremendously successful. And the one thing he's talking about is family and loved ones and who he didn't spend time with. So for me, yes, if I'm giving advice, absolutely. Like, my wife to this day is like, we're planning our vacations before you plan a tour, before you plan shows, before you book anything, right? All of those things, we're going to make sure family time is locked and loaded, and then everything else is going to have to fit around that, and you may not get as high as you would have gotten. That's going to be the price of balance and not wanting to look back with major regrets.
But would you also say that maybe you're achieving more if you do take that time away? I mean, in other words, that you're not when you're working, you're all in and you're working hard and you're not distracted by the fact that you're missing something important or that you have blown off somebody who you should have been hanging out with or that you know that your kid is maybe, you know, making a turn you don't want them to. It's early, but you're still a little bit distracted by it, but yet you're on a business trip or you're down in Los Angeles or something like that. I mean,
yes. Yeah, well, it's kind of like the philosophy around rest, right? Some people want to work, 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 and they feel like if I do more work, I don't have time for rest. Well, actually, your production level is tied to your rest. So the more rest, the better you're going to work. You're going to be more productive, right? So you actually need to rest. So you need the family time. You need the loved one times. You need to go eat ice cream with your kid and tune out. And when it's work time's off, it's over. But I want to ask you, what's your dopamine hit? What is your thing? You have a bar. What is it? There's something in there, man, that gets you going. What is it?
I think one in the bar,
uh-huh.
You know, one of the things that surprised me at how great it felt was to look at what we paid annually in payroll. And not in a way that meant we were cheap in what people were actually making. And that, I mean, because as a business owner, you feel a little bit like you helped create a job. Yeah. And hopefully you created a good one. We rarely have somebody walk away. And usually if they do, it's moving away or something like that. It's not regarding, I would say that the relationship with the employees is one of the biggest things. And I would say on those nights when you walk in, man, I can't even bottle up this thing.
Yeah.
When you walk in and everyone's having a good time and it's humming along and they're in the bar and they're digging and they're not planning on going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like that thing to me is magic. I could never get enough of that.
You know what's magic? Watching you say that. I wish everyone could see that because you can see your genuine look. The dopamines are already, they're firing right now. You're
thinking about it. The sadness that we can't do that right now. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, like, when you have those moments, and you sort of like, life is just bridging between those moments, right?
Yeah. So is there, in relationship to that moment, right? So I want to keep leaning in there. If you have that moment, you walk in the bar and it's packed and it's cracking. Shout out to the Kraken. And you have this great, you got this great moment happening. So then for you, is there a part of you that gets drawn into that? And does it ever fight against your work-life balance?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. I mean, because inevitably that moment will be broken because, you know, a cooler will go out, freezer will go out or something. Yeah. And then suddenly all that comes and you have to go fix something or someone has done a horrible thing to your toilet, which happens, you know, once a week. I mean, I don't even know. My side theory is that you should not be granted a liquor license in Washington State unless you're a journeyman plumber, because there is nothing but plumbing problems if you own a bar. But yes, of course that does. I mean, what about you? Like, when do you have that moment when it feels like perfect?
Oh man, on stage, right? Like,
really?
At the end of the day, I'm a stage guy. The studio's awesome too. There's a bunch of them along the way. Number one, the moment the inspiration comes for a song and you're ready to, whether it's creating a beat or hearing a beat, and I'm like, ooh, I gotta go at this track, right? So that's one moment. A secondary moment would be when you're in the studio and you're laying the track or the playback. The first time you really hear the playback done and it's lightly mixed and you're like, oh, I got him on this one. Right. This is it, right? And then the other moment is all the way around. So it does create, as I'm saying this, it's a process of like one high to the next, right? It's one fix. The next fix after I hear that song is like, well, we got to get this song out. The next fix is the response, right? Oh, they love it. Okay, well, now we got to get on stage and perform it. And then it's like, now we got to do it again, right? And so it's a revolving door. Yes, it can get in the way of work-life balance because you have a family. And there are times where when I start to hear my daughter say, you're just always on the phone. That's when I know, okay, reminder, time to step back, start setting boundaries, because my commitment is to my family first, right? And it's not in word, in actual action. I've got to put them first. And so I'm not saying that I don't toe the line and drift off a little bit every now and again. But once I'm called on it, I like to believe that I pull back. And there are some times where there's a season where I'm like, baby girl, it's just daddy's going to be a little busy for the next week or two. You know what I mean? And as soon as that's over, you know, we'll be ready to rock and roll. So, I don't know which one we're at here.
Oh. So we're going to talk about, well, your favorite subject and my favorite subject, sports and hygiene, and how are we going to keep playing sports, professional sports, and still occupy some sort of area that is actually a safe space when it comes to coronavirus. Coming up next.
Thank God it's Friday. We are back. Tom and Curly Show. It's your boy Dre's. I got my guy, Mike Lewis. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Still rocking and rolling.
Still rocking and rolling, and still, I guess, the last day of our occupation here.
The last dance. Mike, I'm Scotty. Let's go. Six rings, right? Let's go.
All right.
Anyway, so have you been watching any basketball or anything?
Yeah, of course I have,
A little bit, huh?
A little bit.
So there's this story right now about how sports, the coronavirus, and hygiene mix. So we're talking all sports, and it's really dare I say, disgusting when you
it's
really,
disgusting when you think about it. Yes.
When you think of all of the fluids that come out of humans,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like, there's actually a point where there's this guy, Jordy Ben, who's in the NHL, who talks about what he calls clearing the runway. I guess where they grab one nostril, they push against it, and they just, you know, mucus.
Evacuate.
They evacuate the mucus. It's like, so it got me thinking of all of the different ways that athletes are having to engage and get around the coronavirus, right? Considering that. Basketball. I mean, these guys, it's a contact sport.
No, I mean, you know, well, I don't know. Did you grow up playing any basketball?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I did too, and that was always my sport of choice. I mean, you could go out there. If you're playing, let's just say that your team's finally got on court because somebody lost and you got your five and you're out there and you're still dry because you haven't played yet, but you get like slapped up against somebody and you're immediately as sweaty as they are. You know that feeling. It's worse when you're dry and they're not. And that's it's disgusting, right? And think about it in today's terms, how awful that is.
It's disgusting at LA Fitness, right? Like you're just down there running some hoop, and there's a guy, he for whatever reasons, it's shirts and skins. Why? I have no idea.
Why do we even do that? I bet that goes away.
Absolutely. And the new NBA, I'm like, everyone's shooting threes. No one posts anyone up. But this guy wants to post you up. He backs you down. You've got sweat across your cheek. You know what I mean? That's completely disgusting. But there's so much, though, to be honest. I think about the NFL and how it's hand-to-hand combat for linemen. Every single play.
Well, and you also, I would suggest anyone who hasn't looked closely at NFL films, watch how often you see, let's just wait to select the halftime when people are walking off, how much actual blood you see on jerseys.
Yeah.
It's a shocking amount.
It is.
It's a shocking amount.
It will completely blow your doors. I think the things that are even more shocking to me are the little things. Right. The little things like how many times you grab your nose. Right. Pitchers, how often they lick their fingers or a batter. I mean, how many times does he walk into the batter's box? He pulls back. He spits 2-3 times. He comes right back in the batter's box. I'm like, they're spitting every pitchers and batters are spitting every single.
Well, and then just take a look at I have some reporter friends and photographer friends who covered the Mariners a lot back in the days where there was still more chewing tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, they said it was like a puddle of chewing tobacco juice on the floor of the dugout. Because they also, baseball players have the great privilege of sitting for much of the game. And so they are sitting there, now it's sunflower seeds. And they'll you know, chew and spit. I don't know how you...
My wife is completely grossed out right now. I know she's listening. And once you started talking about tobacco and a puddle, she's done. Yeah. I mean, the other little things that you think about are like the Gatorade bottle, right? I mean, the small one that the guy grabs and he puts his hand. When you're sweating, everything's sweating. Your hand's sweating. You pick it up. You have a little Gatorade. You put it back down. Probably the most disgusting thing I saw in this entire article was Mark Schlereth from ESPN talking about he threw up before every game. So he's just, you know, into a garbage can. So he's not even putting his head in the commode. No. He's grabbing a garbage can, throwing up. And I've seen enough videos on COVID to know that stuff's floating in the air, man.
Well, and then you start yelling at someone or you start trash talking someone. And suddenly, you know, you've got this situation where you're all that other stuff you've already done all over the field.
Yeah.
Now you're spraying in somebody's face because you're fake. Because it's not like you trash talk at 20 yards.
Yeah.
You get right up in someone's grill, right?
Yeah.